Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Monday, August 24th, I'll be reading to you from the Metro West Daily News. Hopkinton ends use of its two automated license plate readers by Norman Miller. Hopkinton is the latest community to end its contract with Flock Safety. In a press release, on Thursday, August 20th, the town announced that it had terminated its contract with the automated license plate readers company, citing statutory deficiencies in the agreement between Flock and the town. Municipal contracts must comply with procurement law, and it is our duty to ensure that we meet those standards, acting in the best interests of our residents and taxpayers, Town Manager Elaine Lazarus said in a statement. Once we found deficiencies in the existing contract, we acted to end the agreement. The town notified Flock on Thursday of its decision effective immediately. The town officials asked the company to turn off the cameras as soon as possible and to have them removed by September 30th. Hopkinton has just two cameras, but police have been planning to expand the network. Public trust depends on both effective public safety and responsible, transparent government, Hopkinton Select Board Chair Shahidul Manin said in a statement. When it concerns were raised about this contract, the town took them seriously, reviewed the matter carefully, and acted promptly based on the findings. As we look ahead, the Select Board supports a thoughtful and transparent review of law enforcement technologies, one that considers public safety needs, privacy, appropriate oversight, legal and procurement requirements, and community input before decisions are made about their future use. Several communities, including Natick, Cambridge, Watertown, and Framingham, have ended their relationships with Flock, citing public concern about how private the data really is and with whom the data is shared. During a Framingham City Council meeting on Tuesday, August 18th, City Councilor John Stefanini presented a so-called Trust in Law Enforcement Ordinance, which would require automated license plate reader vendors to meet certain criteria decided upon by the city. However, several other councilors opposed having license plate reading cameras in the city, and several residents spoke out against the cameras and argued for an outright ban. Stefanini withdrew his motion to approve the ordinance, and it was referred back to the Rules, Ordinance, and Ethics Subcommittee. For a possible ordinance that would ban automated license plate readers. Recently, Stowe terminated its contract after an officer allegedly used law enforcement databases, including Flock data, to track information on an acquaintance. And according to WCVB-TV, two Lynn police officers were placed on leave after an audit of Flock usage showed concerning pattern in some searches. According to the press release from Hopkinton, the town will conduct a broad review of the tools and technology used by Hopkinton Police, including the automated license plate readers. Last month, Interim Police Chief Scott Van Ralton met with the Select Board and told them the department has been using Flock for 4 months and planned to expand the program with additional cameras. He said the cameras were purchased with civil forfeiture money. In a statement on Thursday, Van Ralton said the Flock cameras can be a valuable tool but understands the concerns. automated license plate reader technology has proven that it can be a very valuable tool in criminal investigations and active emergencies, he said. Even so, we recognize that our community has raised legitimate concerns, and we take those seriously. We remain committed to transparency and to ensuring this and future technology reflects the value and priorities of our community going forward. Demolition Day. Demolition was underway on August 20th at the former Danforth Museum on Union Avenue in Framingham, making way for the future Framingham Regional Justice Center, which is expected to be completed in the summer of 2029. The new facility will consolidate multiple area courts, including district, juvenile, probate, and family and housing court in Framingham. The three-story, 116,000-square-foot building will be a state-of-the-art courthouse, housing 7 courtrooms, 5 hearing rooms, a jury pool room, 2 deliberation rooms, a district attorney's office, and a court service center. The adjacent Framingham Public Library is broadcasting a live stream of the demolition on its YouTube page. Hot Chicken Franchise Signs Lease in Framingham by Caroline Bunnell. The city's roster of chicken chains is about to expand as Hangry Joe's Hot Chicken and Wings prepares to open on Worcester Road, Route 9, one of the brand's first locations in Massachusetts. The Virginia-based chain recently signed a lease for 271 Worcester Road and is expected to open within 6 to 12 months. Brad Smith, a representative from the brand, told the Daily News. It will occupy the ground floor of a two-story building that also houses Sichuan Gourmet and Black Sheep Art Collection. Hangry Joe's is known for its Nashville-style hot chicken sandwiches, chicken tenders and wings. The restaurant also serves loaded fries, loaded mac and cheese, salads, and chicken and waffles. Our premise is simple: to offer our customers the best chicken in town in an unforgettable experience to enjoy with friends and family, Smith wrote in an email. Framingham will be among the first Massachusetts locations to have a Hangry Joe's. Smith said the city's proximity to both Boston and Worcester made it an attractive target, adding that Framingham's demographics and commuter traffic are also positive factors. Shoaib Muhammad, an area representative and developer for the chain's Massachusetts and Rhode Island locations, told the Daily News that Hangry Joe's looks forward to adding to the region's commercial activity. I would emphasize Framingham's strong and diverse community, significant restaurant and retail activity, accessibility, and location within the Metro West Boston market, he said. It gives Hangry Joe's an opportunity to introduce Nashville-style hot chicken to a broad customer base from Framingham and surrounding communities. Representatives said in a Hangry Joe's is also in a development in Worcester, with commitments for 6 locations in central and eastern Massachusetts, as well as Rhode Island. Hangry Joe's, spelled H-A-N-G-R-Y, offers various heat levels ranging from plain to high spice levels, including an angry hot that requires customers to sign a liability waiver. They emphasize that their chicken is always fresh and never frozen. The franchise has more than 130 locations in 20 states, as well as international locations in the United Arab Emirates, Japan, Canada, and South Korea. But there are none in New England, with the closest being in Brooklyn, New York. Hangry Joe's will join a growing list of fast food chicken restaurants in Framingham, including Dave's Hot Chicken, Chick-fil-A, Raising Cane's, and Cluck and Crispy Chicken. The city even has a stretch of Cochituate Road, Route 30, known as the Chicken Strip, because of its concentration of chicken restaurants. Framingham Mayor Condominiums Will Get Trash Collection in Fiscal 27, by Beth McDermott. Framingham Mayor Charlie Sisitsky said he will restore city-funded trash and recycling collection for condominium residents through June 30, 2027, reversing a decision previously made for the fiscal 2027 budget. The change was announced during Tuesday, August 18th, City Council meeting, according to the community announcement. Sisitsky said the decision followed feedback from residents and condominium associations, as well as discussions with City Council leadership. The reversal means condominium residents will continue receiving trash collection and recycling service without additional cost, according to the announcement. Funding for the service had been slated to end under the fiscal 2027 budget, which went into effect July 1st. The city now plans to maintain the program through the remainder of the fiscal year, while officials evaluate its future. During the fiscal 2027, the mayor's office will work with condominium associations and a new public works director, once hired, to assess the program and determine how it could be funded in future years. According to the announcement, the annual cost of providing the service is estimated at $500,000. City officials said the review process will focus on identifying a sustainable funding approach for the program going forward, while maintaining conversations with condominium associations and public works leadership. Pennsylvania woman sues after getting cyclosporiasis. Parasite can have lasting consequences, attorney says, by Finch Walker from USA Today Network. A Pennsylvania woman is suing Taco Bell and Taylor Farms in federal court after she was hospitalized with cyclosporiasis in July. The lawsuit was filed August 18th in federal court by Pittsburgh law firm Robert Pierce and Associates, PC, on behalf of Heather Kiebert of Mercer County, against Taylor Farms, Taylor Fresh, and Taco Bell. It is important to note that this illness is much more severe than food poisoning, attorney Robert Pierce told the USA Today. This is not a scenario where someone is sick overnight and then feeling better the next day. This parasite can cause lasting consequences in the future, rear up its head at a later date, and it's important that anyone who believes they've gotten sick from the parasite receive medical attention to help prevent future problems. Since May, cyclospora infections linked to lettuce sold by Taylor Farms have sickened thousands and caused 2 deaths, according to the Centers for Disease Control. The lawsuit alleges that on or around July 7th at a Taco Bell in Meadville, Pennsylvania, Kiebert ate an avocado ranch chicken stacker, a meal that contained shredded lettuce distributed by Taylor Farms. She was unaware that the food might be contaminated with cyclospora and would not have purchased it if she were aware, according to the lawsuit. On or around July 10th, Kiebert began to experience symptoms of cyclosporiasis. She was hospitalized July 12th for 2 days and diagnosed with cyclosporiasis through laboratory testing, the lawsuit said. The lawsuit alleges that Kiebert was injured as a result of buying the meal at Taco Bell, and that Taco Bell and Taylor Farms had a responsibility to disclose the possible contamination of the lettuce. Kiebert did not know and did not have a reason to know that the product she purchased and consumed was contaminated with the diarrhea-causing parasite Cyclospora, and adds that she expected the food she purchased to be safe and not contaminated by harmful parasites, the lawsuit says. Pierce said Kiebert has asked his office to examine the procedures and protocols that were or were not followed by Taylor Farms and Taco Bell. Her goal is to do everything possible to prevent something like this from happening again and affecting other patrons of fast food restaurants, he said. Taylor Farms issued a voluntary recall of Iceberg lettuce products on July 17th, just 10 days after Kiebert consumed the lettuce. There was no confirmed link between Taco Bell or any specific ingredient, supplier, restaurant, or retailer, and Cyclospora infections, the company said. As of August 17th, there were from 200 to 499 laboratory-confirmed cases of Cyclospora in Pennsylvania, according to the CDC. Nationwide, there have been 15,716 confirmed cases acquired in the United States, 828 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths. There have also been at least 11,841 additional cases of cyclosporiasis that have not been laboratory confirmed or that require further investigation to determine whether they were acquired in the United States. USPS issues final rules to tighten mail-in voting, by David Shepherdson, Reuters, Washington. The U.S. Postal Service published a final vote August 21st to tighten requirements for mail-in voting ahead of the November congressional elections, despite a court order blocking the changes from taking effect. USPS said it was issuing its 95-page rule so it could take immediate effect if a court lifted its injunctions on it and be able in place for the upcoming election. Under the rule, USPS would not deliver ballots in states that do not comply with the rule's new standards. USPS's final rule requires states to provide lists of voters who received mailed ballots to the agency. Last week, U.S. District Judge Indira Talwani in Boston blocked USPS from adopting those rules ordered by President Donald Trump ahead of the November elections that will decide control of Congress. Trump, a Republican, signed his executive order in March after years of calling for tighter rules on voting by mail and pushing the false claim that his 2020 election defeat was the result of widespread voter fraud. The rule, which was posted late August 21st, will be formally published August 26th. USPS will take no action to implement the order unless a court lifts the injunction. USPS referred questions to the White House. Under its rule, if it takes effect, USPS will not collect or record party affiliation and will not inspect ballot contents, and postal workers are not authorized to open mail sealed against inspection. USPS will maintain data from the exterior of the envelope, including address and barcode information. Postmaster General David Steiner defended the plan in June, saying the Postal Service is making sure we match the ballots that a state believes they're sending out to what they actually get sent out. Many states and Democrats in Congress have argued USPS does not have authority, and it is too close to the election to drastically change election rules. The rule unveiled August 21st would require states to provide to the USPS the names and barcodes tied to their mail-in ballots for federal elections and require states to provide unique barcodes applied to the outbound and return ballot mail envelopes. USPS said it will earlier will help determine adherence to federal law and facilitate law enforcement efforts. 22 states sue feds over trucker data request by Lauren DeYoung and Daniel Gonzalez from the Arizona Republic and USA Today Network, Phoenix. Nearly two dozen states are alleging federal government overreach in a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Department of Homeland Security after the U.S. agencies sought personal records of about 17 million truckers nationwide over the last 5 years. Amid the Trump administration's escalating crackdown on immigrant truck drivers, the lawsuit filed by 22 attorneys general is challenging the demand for records they say is needlessly overboard and out of proportion to any legitimate interest DHS could have in its records. Thousands of immigrant truck drivers have been pulled off roads around the country for failing English proficiency tests or operating trucks with non-domiciled commercial driver's licenses obtained with temporary work permits. New rules bar asylum seekers, temporary protected status holders, and those who qualify for deferred action for childhood arrivals from getting those licenses with temporary work permits. The attorneys general, all Democrats, argued subpoenas served by DHS and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration violate privacy laws and data sharing contracts. They also allege the subpoena by the FMCSA was a cover for immigrant enforcement. But Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said the federal government is entitled to such information and that the request was a necessary step to keep unsafe and unqualified drivers off the road. He pointed to the high-profile fatal crash along the Florida Turnpike in August 2025 involving a truck driver who was an undocumented immigrant. The Department of Transportation touted operations that have taken around 56,000 truck drivers off the road nationally. At the center of the lawsuit is a little-known database called the Commercial Driver's License Information System, which states used to share information about applicants for commercial driver's licenses to flag disqualified drivers and ensure a driver is not already licensed in another state. Commercial driver's licenses are necessary to drive heavy, large, or specialized vehicles, like semi-trucks. People who do not have citizenship but reside in the country can receive a non-domiciled commercial driver's license. This lawsuit is the latest in a series of nearly 50 cases against the Trump administration by a coalition of attorneys general. Foreign-born truck drivers are not new, but experts say the industry saw an influx of drivers after the COVID-19 pandemic. Trucking industry groups like Arizona Trucking Association have applauded the Trump administration's efforts, saying weak oversight of non-domiciled commercial driver's licenses issued by states led to a rise in immigrant truck drivers who did not meet long-standing English proficiency standards. But Cassandra Zimmer Wong, an immigration policy analyst at More in Common, A nonprofit that studies political divisions say there is no hard evidence that suggests immigrant truck drivers are less safe than citizen truck drivers. Tens of thousands ordered to evacuate. Wildfire in Nevada threatens Reno area. By Siddharth Kavala and Suzanne McGee, Reuters, New York. Tens of thousands of people have been evacuated this weekend from the area of Reno, Nevada, and many others were under orders to leave on August 23rd. As wildfire reached the outskirts of the state's third most populous city. About 42,000 residents have been displaced or in active evacuations, with an additional 45,000 to be prepared to evacuate status as the Hawk Fire threatened northern Reno, local officials said August 23rd. Local TV footage showed flames approaching roads. In eyewitness video verified by Reuters, smoke from the hills billowed over nearby residential neighborhoods. Fire tracking websites showed evacuation zones extending from the Sierra Nevada hills to the University of Nevada in northwest Reno. The fire has burned 13,000 acres so far, officials said at a press conference. The fire was human-caused and remains under investigation, they said. Three civilians and three first responders have been injured, said Shane Ackerson, a commander leading fire and rescue operations. Officials first received reports of a fire off Hawk Meadow Trail at about 11:15 a.m. local time on August 22nd, said Richard Edwards, chief of Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District. Firefighters on August 22nd worked amid extreme red flag conditions, he said. Red flag conditions are a combination of warm temperatures, very low humidity, and strong winds that raise the risk of wildfires. We expect those same strong conditions to be back this afternoon, Edwards said on August 23rd. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo declared a state of emergency late August 22nd in Washoe County, which includes Reno and parts of Lake Tahoe. This is an active and rapidly evolving situation, and I urge everyone in the affected areas to remain vigilant and follow the direction of local officials, Lombardo said in a statement. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.